Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show, hosted by author, investor, money partner, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris, equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, this is Bruce Norris. Thanks for joining us. Once again today, we're joined by Donna Bauer. Donna is a national expert on the subject of buying notes at a discount, and she started, though, 20 years ago, just being a soccer mom looking for a way out of babysitting kids at a buck an hour. Donna, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Bruce.
Who typically owns the notes that are the most likely to accept a discount?
Well, it depends on if you're talking about good paper or bad paper. Which one are we on here?
Let's start with the good paper.
With the good paper, we're dealing with the seller carryback deeds of trust. So anyone who has owned a home and they sold the house, or it could be, of course, a commercial property, but they carried back the financing and allowed their buyer to pay them over time for that property. So it can really be just about anyone who's ever owned any property. A lot of times it's individuals. If you go through the county records, you'll even see, though, that a lot of times it's small private investment companies and that kind of thing.
Donna, define a bad paper for us then, since you brought up the subject.
Okay. Bad paper is actually real good.
Oh, okay.
Great profits out of bad paper. That is, if you're buying it as bad paper and you know it, because you can get huge discounts on it. Bad paper is any type of note or deed of trust where the people are in default and they're behind on their payments. And typically, of course, our bad paper could be on a seller carryback or a privately held deed of trust. But in today's market, the real market for the bad paper is from the institutions.
You know, we were talking off mic about something but it's very interesting. California has civil codes that protect an owner in foreclosure against people that would be predatory buyers, you know, equity purchasers. Are there any civil codes that do the same for lenders, for these large discount potentials of buying notes? Is there any law that says, you know, you really can't do that?
That I can't buy the note from the lender?
At a discount. That's correct.
Oh, no. In fact, based on the California code, if you are buying the note from the lender, that is an exception to that particular code.
Absolutely. I find that very interesting, that I would imagine, and the reason the civil code exists in California, it's 1695, which will put you through the ringer if you're a buyer of somebody that's living in the home and is in foreclosure, that there really is no such equivalent law, even if the note that you'd like to buy at a discount is held by a private party. Would that be a true statement?
Yes.
Okay. Now, I would think that's a big advantage.
Absolutely. You know, a lot of people are doing the short sales. That's probably one of the hottest ways to buy properties in today's market. And the short sales, without a doubt, fall under the jurisdiction of this 1695. But one of the exceptions to that is if you buy the defaulted note from the bank. And most people aren't aware that you can even do that. They think the only way to work these pre-foreclosures is to get the bank to accept a discount and allow you to buy the house from the homeowner. But another way to go about that same transaction, which is a much, much better way to do the deal, is to buy the bank's position.
Now, why do you think that's a better way to go?
Oh, there's lots of reasons. The main reason for me is that it gives you control of the deal. It's easier. A lot of times you make more money on it, because when you buy the note, there's so many different things that you can do with the note that you can't do with a property. You can buy the note and restructure it. You can buy the note and just wholesale it as is. You can buy the note and get a deed in lieu of foreclosure. At that point, now you own the house, and you can do whatever you want to with the house. So buying the note gives you a lot more options. But as I just mentioned, the main reason that I feel it's so important to understand why it's better to buy a note instead of doing a short sale is when you're doing a short sale, there are lots of things that come up that get in the way of your deal. And you wind up just having to walk away from a perfectly good deal.
That's right. A lot of short sales are done. You put in a lot of work with no results.
Exactly. And in California, a big one is a lot of times there's plenty of equity in the property, and the homeowner may say, you know, I'll let you buy this at a discount, but I need at least $25,000, so I've got a little something, you know, for my next property or to get into my next house. And the bank, now you look at them, they're taking a $150,000 hit. Do you think they're going to let that homeowner have $25,000?
No.
That's not going to happen.
No.
Where on the other hand, if you've got a great profit built into that, you could easily pay $25,000 to the homeowner, and you'd still have a great deal. But on a short sale, the bank would never let that happen. So you need to become the bank, because the bank makes the rules. And if you become the bank, you can do whatever you want to.
You know, the ability to restructure, that's a very valid point. I don't typically buy a lot of notes, but on occasion I have. And here's a good example of what you're talking about. We bought a $225,000 note that was 1 week away from trustee sale. So it was probably 7 months behind, had been in the foreclosure process for 3 months plus about 2 weeks. We bought that note for $80,000, and the total amount that was owed, including late payments and everything, was about $255,000. I had such leverage that I could have had the most friendly meeting with that owner that he could have ever imagined a lender having, because I could have said, you know what, why don't we do this? Why don't we say, you refi this property for $150,000 and we call it a day? I mean, that would have been a nice meeting.
I like your thinking. You know, Bruce, so many people in this industry, it's sad to say, and I hate to admit it, but they try to rip off the homeowners, and they try to squeeze out every nickel they can. My thought is, if you're able to buy this at such a huge discount, why not share that blessing with the homeowner? You know, why not help them to keep their house and not lose everything?
You know, and what's interesting, and this is true of being a buyer, I really enjoy buying directly from a lender owner or a government entity owner than a private party and buying at a discount, because I don't really care about the discount size when I'm dealing with, say, Bank of America, where that isn't true when I'm staring across the table with Grandma.
That's very true.
And so you can get a much bigger discount with the lender-owned paper, I'm sure. And then if you can somehow manage to benefit the owner, it just makes it a lot more of a pleasant business, I would think.
You're absolutely right. And that's why I mentioned before, are we talking good paper or bad paper? Typically, when I'm buying the notes that are not in default, that is going to be a privately held note in deed of trust, a seller carryback. But when I'm looking at buying the defaulted paper, then my market is definitely the institutional lenders.
The seller carryback note holder, a lot of people think that they were really hoping secretly to get the property back. Do you find that to be true, or is that really not true at all?
I think that does happen without a doubt. I mean, you can definitely go into a deal like that. You know, you've collected payments for 2 or 3 years, they default, and you get the property back, and meanwhile now you're 2 or 3 years of payments ahead. It really just depends on that particular person's motive, situation,
their
you know?
Makeup. We do a lot of hard money loans, and so we have a lot of trusteed investors, if you will, for that. And I have noticed that none of them want property at all.
They really?
Not at all. There are no, there's nothing of interest in a property owner. They want a check monthly. And if there's a foreclosure, they are not happy.
So I don't. Interesting.
Yeah, they just want the cash flow. They don't. And that surprised me in a way, because I would have thought a little differently. And that's why I asked you, you've been in a lot more transactions with sell or carry back notes than I'll ever dream of being in. And I was wondering if somehow when that seller carry back note had a little bit of maturing, that they didn't even consider it real money like I did. To me, that would make sense. You know, I'm just getting this X amount of dollars per month. As a matter of fact, when I bought my commercial building, it was interesting. We had I went into the paper, and there was an advertisement. It was the first time I ever looked to buy a commercial building. and the ad said commercial building half price, which I thought was a really good running start at a negotiation, first of all.
Absolutely.
But when we got together, he wanted $125 for a 250 building. Of course, it wasn't really worth that, but his offer was he would carry a $50,000 second behind the $75,000 first, and it would be a no-down deal. And when we got down to it, he had a partner, and he was willing to carry at 5% interest, and I figured out what the monthly payment would be, and I just looked at him, and I said, wouldn't you guys just rather take $5,000? And he had diminished the value of the paper in his own mind already because it was only giving him $100 or less a month. And
right.
I think that's where your theory is absolutely correct, that over time, that $100, $200 dribble is kind of goes into the woodwork where a chunk of money might make a difference.
You are so right on target. Most people would prefer a lump sum of cash as opposed to a small monthly payment over a long period of time, without question.
Any tax difference when that occurs? I'm just curious.
To tell you the truth, I do all of my deals in my IRA so that there isn't a tax consequence as far as I'm concerned on holding those. So it really depends on what your situation is. If you don't mind, I'd like to back up and point out something, because you had mentioned about the hard money being a hard money lender.
Uh-huh.
For a lot of folks, they want to become a hard money lender. And I think it's a great thing if you're experienced in the industry, and without a doubt, you can make a lot of money. But for a person who is just getting into the business, it's a lot safer to buy a seller carryback deed of trust. And here's why. When you do a hard money loan, you don't know if they're going to pay you or not. You certainly hope so. And if they don't, you're at a great loan to value, and you can go take the property. But one of the really great advantages of doing the seller carrybacks, of buying them, is that they have a pay history. And if someone has made payments for 12 months or 24 months or, whatever it is, there's a lot less likelihood that they are going to go into default. So when you're investing in a seller carryback deed of trust, and you have the seasoning, that's how long they've been making payments, you can look at the seasoning, they've been making payments, that makes for an extremely safe deal. And when you buy it at a discount, you may wind up getting even a higher rate of return than you would as a hard money lender.
Now, what's interesting, now, when I talk about being a hard money lender, I definitely am talking about almost a business lender to the people in the business of buying houses. For instance, our hard money loan business makes no loans to people that occupy properties at all. So,
And I wouldn't either.
Yeah.
Because, first of all, you're going to run into some a lot of laws for residential lending.
Absolutely. They're just as protective of that transaction as they are the people in foreclosure that live in the house. That's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm, most definitely. But you know where I see that beginning investors make their mistake? They get in and they're so anxious to do a deal, and they think, I'm going to be a hard money lender. Now, you've been doing this for years, Bruce, and you know how to identify a property, how to evaluate it, and you know that all your ducks are in a row and it's a safe deal. But too often, the new investor, just dying to get a deal under their belt, they make loans that I would have never made.
Absolutely.
And they're making it to a fellow investor who it's their first deal, and he's a rehabber, and the deal goes down the tubes, and they don't know what to do with it. And I find that that's an area where a lot of new investors lose money, simply because they're getting in over their heads without having the proper education.
And greed really plays a part in that. Every time we speak at an investor club, they usually have a little time where people promote something. And invariably, there's a hard money lender that gets up and says, we don't care about your FICO score. We don't care if you have a dime. All you have to have is equity. And that's really not our loan business at all. So you're right. There's a lot of danger in making paper that just from the start probably isn't going to work out. And then you better have equity. Let me just ask, is there any product types that you avoid? In other words, I wouldn't think you would value the note carried back on a piece of land at all the same as you would on something that's a single-family home.
That's very true. We have specific criteria, and it's based on the type of property. The big thing that we look at, like, you might have the safest property, of course, that you could invest in would be your residential home. Then we go to a rental property. That's a little bit more risky. Then multifamilies are more risky than commercial. And the most risky of all would be investing in raw land. Now, the easiest way to adjust for that extra risk is simply to go in at a lower loan to value. Because let's say if we buy a note secured by a lot, and we're at a 50% loan to value, that means if we wind up getting that lot back because they quit making payments, we can sell the lot for half of what it's worth and still recoup all of our money.
So you want to make sure that when you buy a note that you have options no matter what scenario plays out.
Most definitely. Oh. Absolutely.
Okay. Do you find that most of these notes run their course, and you're ending up with the benefit? Let's say you buy a note at a discount, and the people that are paying that just keep on paying, and they go years and years. Or is it common that you get refied out? And if you do get refied out, does that increase your yield?
You know, I don't think I've ever held a long-term note to maturity. Certainly our little 1 or 2 or 3 year notes have matured. But the typical notes where you've amortized them over 20 years, maybe you put a 10-year balloon on, I've never had one go to maturity. They always refinance. Either the people refinance or they sell the house. For whatever reason, you wind up getting paid up early and paid off early, and you hit the nail on the head. Any time that you get paid off early on a note that you bought at a discount, and you're realizing your money, let's say, in 12 months instead of 12 years, your rate of return goes through the roof.
Absolutely. Is there a time period that you would say is sort of ideal where a seller carry back a note? And how long does it take before they might listen to the one-time big check as opposed to getting their monthly installments?
I think it's usually like a year or so later. Now, I always start marketing immediately because, like we talked about last time, I want to get my name out there so that they've seen it. Like, I might send out 3 or 4 mailings a year.
Mm-hmm.
So that I send 4 to 5 mailings a year, and so that they see my name every couple months. And even though they may not make the decision until next year, by now they realize that I am for real, I'm in the business, and when they are ready to sell, they call me. Now, it's not unusual, though, Bruce. Sometimes they'll carry back a mortgage or a deed of trust, and things happen. They get married, they get divorced, they want to start a business, they go to school, whatever it is. Something happens unforeseen, and they need to cash out. And that can happen any time in the course of holding that deed of trust. It could happen a month later, or it could happen 5 years later. And the important thing is you want to be in a position that when they want to cash out, you want to be there to buy that note in deed of trust.
What kind of precautions do you take when you're not dealing with a first trust deed, where it's a junior lien of some kind? And at what point would you say, you know, that's just too junior of a position for me to have an interest?
Well, there's lots of things. First of all, I want to say don't invest in a second deed of trust unless you're an experienced investor. That's one of the areas where I see a lot of new people get in trouble. When I buy a second, first of all, I want it to be at least 1/4 the amount of the first. Otherwise, it's not worth my while.
Right.
For example,
and give me a reason why that is. I know why it is, but in other words, what you're saying is very important.
Let's say you have a $5 million property.
Right.
And you've got $1 million first and a little $10,000 second behind it.
Yeah.
Now, that seems like that second would be so safe. It's got $4 million worth of equity backing up this little $10,000 second. And the truth is it's so risky because if it does go into default, are you prepared to make payments or buy out $1 million first
right,
to protect your $10,000 second?
That's right. Monthly, you're putting up another $10,000 to protect your position.
Exactly. So that's one of the first things I look at. Assuming that works out, assuming I'm going to get a higher rate of return because it is more risky, because I might have to make those payments on the first. So assuming I'm getting a good rate of return, then in my due diligence before I buy it, one of the key things I want to do is I want to verify how much is owed on that first. And that's where a lot of new people make a mistake as well. They see public record says there's $1 million first there. They take that for face value when they don't know if that, that $1 million first could be in default and it could really be $1.5 million.
And they could also be in line very quickly to have to pay off the whole loan amount instead of just make it current.
Exactly.
Okay. How about telling us some of your favorite success stories? I'm sure you've taught a lot of people that maybe even started in similar positions that you found yourself in, and now they have some success stories and maybe even a different lifestyle.
Oh, I've got lots of those. One of my favorites is a young gal, Maria, and she called me up. She had been working a short sale, and this house was worth $245,000. And there was a $160,000 first on it and a $37,000 second. And what happened was the husband of the homeowner died in the middle of her deal.
Mm.
And she calls me up frantic. She says, Donna, I've worked on this for 2 months. The first says that they won't do the short sale anymore. It's going to sheriff sale. The second still wants to work with me. What can I do? I said, call up the second and see if they would sell you their note. And she did.
Mm-hmm.
Bruce, the day before the sheriff's sale, she bought a $37,000 second for $3,700.
Fantastic.
I mean, it was awesome. It was totally awesome. And so what happened was people will say, oh, well, she could have just gone to the sale and bought it at the sale. Well, maybe she could and maybe she couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
But by buying it in advance, you know that she actually took control of that property. So when she went to the sale the next day, what might have happened is that if the bid had gone up to $197,000, the first of $160,000 would have been paid off, she would have gotten $37,000 for the note that she bought the day before.
Mm-hmm.
For $3,700.
Yes.
So she would have made $33,000 in one day. Now, that is not what happened, but what happened is even cooler. Now, and again, we always talk about if you're buying a second, you better make sure that you've got enough money to pay off the first.
Yes.
Well, this was her first deal.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't have $160,000, but she did have a private lender who said, I'll go with you to the sale, and if you win the bid, I'll loan you $160,000. She wins the bid for $160,000. She'd already bought the second for $3,700. She gets a $245,000 house for $163,700. That was her first deal.
That was her first deal. She had to feel very good about that.
Oh, she was elated. She called me. She was so excited. I couldn't have done this without you. I would have never thought to buy the note. And that's what makes what you and I do so rewarding. I know you have similar experiences.
What, in your opinion, what separates Maria from some of the people that take courses and they don't do it? So what was Maria willing to do that she's a success story?
She was willing to call me up and ask for help.
Okay.
I really believe that it's important to have a mentor, a coach that I know. You mentioned before on our last show that first deal I did was a rather sophisticated deal.
Yes.
For the first deal that I would do. But I was able to do it because I had a mentor. I had an attorney who was working with me. And I think that to get into this business, you need to have someone that you can turn to that can give you guidance.
Donna, we are out of time. I'm going to give your website again, www.thenotebuyer.com, or call 800-211-5698. We know this radio show is going to be airing during your event, but you said you're going to make a product available and you have training, of course. So just go to that website and you'll be able to get all of the available products that Donna has. Donna, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com. or email questions and or comments to radio@thenorrisgroup.com. We'll see you next week at 5:30 here on News Talk 590 KTIE.